Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, we start with the good. It's a story that broke first on Friday afternoon, and so it's a couple days old now, but it's news that we've seen in different forms before, and unfortunately it doesn't seem like it's necessarily going to resolve the debate, although it should. President's own administration once again reporting that the environmental consequence of construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, which has now been on hold for 4 to 5 years, is negligible. So in other words, there's no good environmental reason, no compelling reason not to go forward with the project. Jay Carney still saying on Friday that the White House needs more time to consult over this. So the good news is his position seems to be getting weaker and weaker.
You know, Greg, if the administration came out and said, we don't like the Keystone pipeline, and we think that despite all the energy benefits, despite all the jobs it would create, we don't like pipelines. We think they're bad. We hate oil, even though we all drive in cars that use them. We all buy products that get to the stores because of trucks using oil and gasoline and stuff like that. If they just decide we want to really stick it to those Canadian SOBs and we're going to show them, if they said it, fine. You know, take that position and take your lumps. Instead, we have this perpetual kicking the can down the road and up, we need to review it more and up, we need to review it more. Look, first of all, okay, there's no way that the country is going to suddenly not need oil, right? It's great that we are producing more. It's great that we are now able to export it more. But Canada's got a lot. And the question is, do you get it down to the refineries down in Louisiana? Get, you know, American companies getting to do the refining and distribution from there? Or do you want them sending it across the country of Canada and sending it out of their west coast over to China? Up to you. I know what I would prefer. You don't want to use a pipeline. Yeah, I guess the idea is that pipelines can break, and indeed they can. We've gotten pretty good at building these things, but yes, there's fear that the oil leaks out and stuff like that. If a pipeline leaks, you know what you do, Greg? You drive out to the leak and you fix it. And obviously, we don't want it to get into aquifer, but when the Exxon Valdez runs aground and there's a big hole in the tanker ship, you've got one, a giant leaking ship, and two, you got to go out and try to see if you can close it off and the waves and it's hitting the environment and all kinds of stuff. So given the choice between pipelines and tankers, I would very much prefer pipelines because it's a lot easier to fix a pipeline when something goes wrong. Environmentalists don't see it this way, and they continue to live in this imaginary land in which everything can run on solar and wind and unicorns and stuff. I'm sorry, unicorns are an endangered species, so they can't use that one. But you get the idea that, you know, we have this opportunity here, and it's galling that the administration doesn't want to say yes, but it's doubly galling that they don't want to come out and admit that they say no. Most of the folks who've looked at this say we can do this safely. The environmental movement has just decided that this is their Armageddon. This is their hill to die on. And that if Obama abandons them on this, they say they'll abandon him. And there are a lot of billionaires who care about Bambi and endangered species and stuff like that. And so they're threatening to withhold their money. So the environmental movement says jump. They say how high, despite the job creation process. And I think this endless regulatory process indicates how the administration, not only does it not allow things to go forward, create jobs, and have all the benefits that come from that, they also have a circumstance in which the administration is allowed to say no without ever having to come out and take the public hit for saying no.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And as is customary, the network that airs the Super Bowl, in this case it was Fox, has a short sit-down with the President of the United States. So it was the President and Bill O'Reilly. He only had 15 minutes. He got right to the point on three of the issues the president's been dodging for a long time now. And we have several clips here. First of all, he wants to know if the president believes that his biggest mistake of his presidency is to promise people if they like their health plan, they could keep it. Here's what Obama said.
This is one that I regret, and I've said I regretted, in part because we put in a grandfather clause in the original law saying that, in fact, you were supposed to be able to keep it. It obviously didn't cover everybody that we needed to, and that's why we changed it so that we further grandfathered in folks.
So it's all good now. And then on to Benghazi, and O'Reilly asked him about the administration for a while blaming the whole thing on the spontaneous demonstration from a YouTube video, supposedly.
That is inaccurate.
All right.
We revealed to the American people exactly what we understood at the time. The notion that we would hide the ball for political purposes when a week later we all said, in fact, there was a terrorist attack taking place the day after I said it was an act of terror. That wouldn't be a very good cover-up.
On the IRS, nothing to see here.
That's not what happened. Folks have, again, had multiple hearings on this. I mean, these kinds of things keep on surfacing, in part because you and your TV station will promote them.
So you're saying if there was involved, no corruption there at all? No.
That's not what I'm saying. That's actually...
No, but I want to know what you're saying. You're the leader
absolutely.
Of the country. You're saying no corruption.
No.
None.
No. There were some boneheaded decisions.
But no
office.
Mass corruption.
Not even mass corruption. Not even a smidgen of corruption, obviously.
Okay.
So, Jim, we've just been wasting our time all these months.
As I'm listening to that, Greg, let's just say, like, I know Bill O'Reilly, this is one of his biggest interviews that he gets to do, and he's very excited about it, and he's enthusiastic, and he has his own combative style. But it's just one of those moments where I wish we had a Brett Baer or a Britt Hume or somebody who could just go back and cite the specifics and say, well, actually, no, on this date, Mr. President, people on the ground were already saying this was a terrorist attack. Cite Susan Rice, cite comments from Jay Carney, because we know how Obama deals with these questions. It's to filibuster, and these things are ludicrous and all that stuff. On the IRS scandal, point out all the different things that Lois Lerner did. But if there was nothing wrong there, why did the IRS apologize? You can go down the list there. So a kind of typically evasive performance by the president. I guess we should say kudos to Bill O'Reilly for bringing it up. You really got to pin Obama down on these things, and you got to cite chapter and verse and specific quotes and specific dates. That's when you get him sweating. But as long as it's in generalities, he can say, oh, it's you crazy folks and Fox News and your conspiracy theories and stuff. And, he really seems to think that if he laughs it off, most of the country will laugh it off with him. And unless, you can really nail him down on the specifics of it, that's when he tends to sweat more. Kind of frustrating the president would be so evasive, and frustrating that he couldn't be held to account the way we'd like to see.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And for those of you who watch the Super Bowl, which I'm guessing is most of you, or at least the first half, it was a dominant performance by the Seahawks. They won 43-8. Malcolm Smith, the linebacker who returned one of Peyton Manning's interceptions for a touchdown, was the most valuable player. So he was excited and explaining what a great moment this was for him and his team. And then there was an unexpected visitor in the press room.
I always imagine myself making great plays, but you never think about being MVP.
Investigate 9/11 was perpetrated by people within our own government.
Jim, they had sniper teams. They had security that would make the CIA, Jack Bauer, and Interpol jealous. How in the world did that happen?
Well, first of all, I'm really disappointed that linebacker missed the opportunity for his 10th tackle of the night. Pile driving him to the ground. So, first of all, how does this guy get in there? Who is this guy? I understand he had applied for the job of interpreter at the Mandela funeral and been turned down, but the Super Bowl hired him to do apparently to mend the door at post-game press conferences. A little weird, a little frustrating. I think it also says something how frustrating it is that 9/11 trutherism still flourishes here in the year 2014, which is kind of an annoying statement about who we are and as a culture. It obviously can only be, one guy who comes up and starts asking these kinds of questions. The other thing that's kind of fascinating is his mentality that, well, if I run to the microphone during the Super Bowl post-game press conference, this will blow everything wide open, right? This will change everything. That's, I guess he's picturing the three British villains from the Jaguar ad. Who are actually all conspiring behind... I'm sorry, it was within our own government, so, By the way, I finally realized the two connection between two of my favorite ads last night, Greg.
What's that?
Jack Bauer is going after the British guys.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing, knowing that Jack will be back in May.
Absolutely. So that was the highlight of the game for me, since it was, over by the first play of the second half, but hopefully everyone had a good game, and this guy can get the help he desperately needs. By the way, if you're going to do that... If you're going to interrupt a player, interrupt the press conference, statement of like, say, a punter or something like that. Don't do it to a linebacker. There's someday a Ray Lewis type or somebody is going to take it a little harsher. There won't be a mean Joe Green. Hey, here, have my jersey, kid. There'll be a little rougher response next time.
So, exactly.
There you go. But he'll think that was just part of the conspiracy, too.
Absolutely. Well, we know Alex Jones has material for the next 2 weeks. So
there you go. Exactly. The linebacker wouldn't let him. The linebacker was in on it.
Oh, amazing. Jim, good to have you back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.